Welcome to Health Connections, the show about people, health, and policy. I'm Dr. Carol Myers, a University of Tennessee College of Nursing professor and a co-host of Health Connections. Today is our annual state legislative update with state senator, physician, and retired Army Colonel, Dr. Richard Briggs. Welcome, Dr. Briggs.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for your willingness to come on the show as the time draws near for the opening of the 112th Tennessee General Assembly on the second Tuesday in January. Since the 111th Tennessee General Assembly adjourned, there was one pandemic-related special session, a general election, and the pandemic has worsened considerably. COVID-related issues will undoubtedly continue to dominate the legislative agenda. Let's begin with where we are on state government action requiring masks and other recommendations from the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, to reduce the spread of the virus.
Well, Dr. Myers, as you know, Governor Lee put in place a mandated restriction on more than 10 people gathering in public places to try to reduce the spread where we have a lot of people. He did not mandate a mask requirement. He is still leaving that to the local leaders, the county mayors in the state without boards of health, and then to the six counties, and that includes Knox counties that have boards of health. He left those decisions to them.
Well, let's look at the local boards of health. We're living out a crisis related to the authority of the local Board of Health in Knoxville and Knox County. Recently, a Knoxville-based state representative, Jason Zachary, introduced a bill to strip all Tennessee Metro Health departments, as you said, there are six, of their policymaking authority. Can you explain what this all means?
Well, I think what's behind the bill is there's been many businesses, particularly those such as bars and restaurants, that have been hurt by the stay-at-home order. There's others that have also. And back early in the pandemic, when it didn't seem to be so bad in Knox County, many of those businessmen felt that it was an overreaction. Actually, that was under the governor's orders and not under our Board of Health at that time. But there's still this discussion that's going on in the government and by the county commission as to whether is it better to let the Board of Health, which are medical experts, make the health decisions, or should these decisions that do affect the whole community be made by the county mayor?
Well, what are the implications of moving to a plan such as we've seen in Representative Zachary's bill that would move the authority away from the Board of Health to the county mayors? What does that mean to our listeners?
Well, I think one of the arguments that I think is a fallacious argument is that this is an unelected board, that there's no control, they're answerable to no one, they're accountable to no one. Frankly, if you look at state law, that's just not true. The members of the Board of Health are all either appointed by the commissioner of the State Department of Health or by the county commission members. And state law does allow every member of the Board of Health to be removed by an elected official, except for the county mayor, who is an ex officio, or he's required to be on there by law. Also, under the state of emergency, where the authority to make those decisions have been given by the governor, as soon as a decision is made, he can void the decision, he can modify the decision, and the government can completely take that authority away from the Board of Health. So they are accountable, and they can be removed, they can be changed. So there is direct oversight by elected officials of that board and their decisions.
Let's turn our attention to COVID-19 vaccination. Administration of the vaccines is underway in Tennessee and across the country. Can you please provide an update on the availability, distribution, and administration of the COVID-19 vaccines in Tennessee?
Well, presently we have two vaccines that are under emergency utilization authorization by the Food and Drug Administration. One is the Pfizer vaccine that was authorized. That has already been distributed, particularly among healthcare workers and among some of the elderly in nursing homes.
the Moderna vaccine will add to the number of vaccines that we have available to start vaccinating our high-risk populations, which are healthcare workers that are on a daily basis in contact with COVID patients, and some of our most vulnerable citizens who are in nursing homes.
When do you foresee vaccines being available to the general public in our state?
Well, the Tennessee Department of Health, they have set up a schedule on who gets the vaccine when, and it's based upon medical need and medical risk. We have healthcare workers, and then we'll have first responders, then we may have teachers and other what we call essential workers. It'll also then go to, just by virtue of their age, the elderly, and these will be people over 65. It will go to citizens that have other health risks. And then finally, it will go to more or less to the general public. What the timeline is, we don't know, because it will be based on the availability of the vaccine. But we anticipate that it'll probably be late this spring or early summer, and perhaps even running into the fall, before we have enough vaccine to get everyone vaccinated.
The governor and the commissioner of health, Dr. Lisa Piercy, have both indicated hospitals in Tennessee are close to a breaking point because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We cannot rely on field hospitals because we do not have the health professionals needed to staff even our regular hospitals. Can you discuss the dire situation with Tennessee hospitals and what can be done to deal with the lack of staffed beds?
I know when the planning was done last spring, particularly in March, April, and May, we felt that really all we needed to do, we could put up tents, we could go to other facilities, we could discharge patients to try to have available beds. And just as you mentioned, Dr. Myers, what's occurring now is that we can expand the number of beds, but what we cannot do in the course of a few days or a few weeks is to train nurses and medical personnel to take care of those patients. And that's what's reached a critical phase. Commissioner Piercy, who is the state commissioner of health, has said that if we have another surge with the Christmas holidays, it will completely overwhelm the hospitals, and we just won't have the personnel to take care of all of the people who would be sick. There's nothing we can do to train the number of nurses we need that quickly, but all we can try to do is to decrease the number of people getting sick by encouraging mask wearing, encouraging the social distancing, the good hygienic care that we know that works. And that should not be up for discussion. That works. But what we have to do is to decrease the number of people that are getting sick and requiring that care.
The pandemic has further revealed and exacerbated issues in the state related to high-speed broadband access. During the pandemic, the importance of broadband access has grown exponentially, especially as it relates to telehealth and other healthcare applications and education. Do you expect broadband access to be a legislative priority?
I certainly do. It's actually been discussed in the legislature for the past 5 or 6 years. And I think that most of the legislators were waiting for the private sector, the Verizon, the AT&T, to expand into the rural areas. And frankly, it just wasn't economically feasible for them to put high-speed cables and high-speed fiber optics when they were just servicing a few people. It just wasn't economically possible. We did pass a bill, and I think we'll see more of this in the coming year, and there may be some federal funding to help pay for it, where the utilities that are already servicing some of these areas, the electric utilities and some of them, will be able to take high-speed broadband into those areas. And just as you mentioned, this is absolutely critical with the personnel shortage we have for medical problems, where people who are unable, or it's a long trip to the large city, or it's a trip that would expose them to people with diseases, is that they can receive their health care by telemedicine. And we've also seen how critical high-speed broadband is in our public education when all the students are home. And there's probably not very much good that will come out of this pandemic, but it has absolutely accelerated maybe 3 to 5 years bringing telemedicine and online education to our students.
Thank you, Dr. Briggs, for joining us yet again on Health Connections, albeit differently this year because of the pandemic. We are virtual. Best wishes to you and your wife, Stephanie, as well as my highly regarded co-host, Brandon Hollingsworth, and our listeners.
Well, I just want to thank you very much. And I do really want to encourage all the listeners is really try to practice these measures. It's becoming a life and death situation. It's becoming critical. We want everyone to be healthy. We want everyone to be well. And I do wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.